Sì, è riempito tante.
Anyhow, thank you for coming and more importantly, welcoming Honorable Davidson for coming because he will be doing a presentation later this morning. Again, to welcome Honorable Tara Blatt, whom is here to replace Honorable Dreyer. He will not be with us. That's the changes that have been effected by the political party they are coming from. However, I'm doing this prematurely because it has not yet been, you know, recorded in the ATC. However, we received the letter from the political party for that effect. So you are welcome, Honorable Terrapland. So we hope you will strengthen and assist the committee in discharging its obligations. Part of our work is purely coming from members, and more often you may find, you know, also yourself making a submission in due course. So you we are looking forward to work with yourself. There will be some changes in terms of the original program that was circulated. We were supposed, amongst other, to consider the minutes of the 16th of March, but due to the short week and the work of the committee section, which is working on 3-day cycle, that is Thursday, Friday, and Monday, they've been unable to edit our set of minutes for the 16th of March. Therefore, that set will then be postponed to the next meeting. However, we'll be able to deal with the minutes of the 9th of March to that effect. We will be, of course, today considering reports of the three, you know, proposal legislation that we have dealt with. I'm sure that in your packages for your consideration. So we will then consider them for adoption and review where possible. There is, I'm not sure why specifically the legislation that was proposed by Honorable Grayling had this, you know, up and downs and a lot of, you know, publicity. But nonetheless, we received a letter from IDASA. I would want to believe that the secretary will circulate the letter amongst yourself for your information. The letter from IDASA, questioning the decision of the committee, but in it there is a lot of, you know, ignorance and failure to understand the work of the committee. The letter I will draft a response to that effect, but before that we will communicate with the presiding officer's offices and notify them about the letter. I'm sure you are aware that the letter has been also copied to the speaker. It will be an easy thing because the speaker will already have the letter in his disposal. On the same token, we had also an article that was talking about the committee in Mail and Guardian of the 18th March 2011. Page 20 of that particular Mail and Guardian attempt to pay his name is funding openness bid. Also, there is a lot of distortion of the decisions of the committee, and I'm sure the communication was not accurately recorded in that particular article. The same procedure will be followed. I will work on respond to that particular and correcting the inaccuracy that the article reported about the work of the committee. But nonetheless, generally, this is a reflection of that the committee it is going somewhere. If you don't work, there's nobody who can talk about you. When you work, there should be some, you know, pat in your shoulder or some criticism. We should always, you know, be prepared to face those kind of challenges. We also, I'm not sure whether. There will be a guideline on focus area for the second term for 2011, which has been received from the office of the chair of the house, basically to assist us and make us to understand what does the parliament expected of us in the second term. And then I'm sure the secretary will make a copy and then circulate amongst yourself for your proper way. And then finally, we will be, as next week will be the last meeting for the first term, we will be preparing a report that in our first or second meeting of the second term will then be considered that report for, assess the report of which will be depicting the work that we have been doing in the first quarter of 2011. That concludes my input in giving you the state of the committee. I'm not sure whether is there anything that members would want to check quickly before we move forward. Thank you very much. It means I was very clear to everybody. May we then receive apologies, Secretary, if any.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Receive apology from Honourable Kumalum.
The rest haven't apologized, and I'm glad that we are correcting in that regard, despite the only apology we have received. We will now invite Honourable Davidson to brief us about the proposed legislation that he has forwarded to ourselves, which intends to regulate the business interests of state employees. Honourable Davidson, once again, you are welcome, and over to you to take us through.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much indeed for allowing me to present this topic before honourable members. I gather that members have a draft of the bill before them. Now, I have to stress that that's very much a draft. It's a conceptual bill, and quite obviously, as I'm sure you're aware, that can be changed as much as you like. It's really the principle that we're talking to in this context, and let me tell you why the principle is most important. Because if one looks at the Public Service Commission, its report, recent report, it highlighted the fact that corruption is becoming endemic in the public service. I point to the fact that in their 2010 State of the Public Service report, they found that 1,204 financial misconduct cases were committed in departments, were reported to the PSC during 2008 and 2009, and this was the highest number to be reported over the last 7 years. In addition, 1,430 complaints of corruption were reported through the PSC's National Anti-Corruption Hotline and referred back to departments for feedback. A further PSC report in December of last year on the financial disclosure framework for 2009-2010 found that only 46% of senior managers in national and provincial departments submitted their financial disclosure forms to the PEC by 31st of May 2010, which was the date for submission. Now, one of the key drivers of corruption is the absence of restrictions on state employees doing business with the state. state employees with a financial interest in companies that tender for goods and services have a clear conflict of interest, yet this has never been regulated. Mm-hmm. Now, the bill before us seeks to do exactly that. National, provincial and local government employers and their families will be prohibited from directly or indirectly holding more than 5% of shares, stock, membership or other interests in an entity that does business with those governments unless approval is given in accordance with certain set criteria which we see set out in the bill. Before the governments enter into any contract with an entity for the sale, lease or supply of goods and services, the entity must provide an affidavit disclosing whether or not it is owned or part owned by employees of that particular sphere of government. All employees, that's the government employees, will be required in addition to disclose their business interests at prescribed intervals. Now, that's in essence what the bill is all about. What I would want to do to elaborate on it is go through the conceptual bill. I gather a memorandum has been circularized. I'm not talking to the memorandum. That is self-explanatory. I suppose encapsulates that which I'm about to elaborate on in terms of going through the bill itself. And once again, I stress the fact that it's a conceptual bill and whatever is there can, in fact, be changed as long as the principle is not deviated from. And of course, when one comes to definitions, business interests are important, and there we set out exactly what the nature of those business interests are. It means a right or entitlement to share in profits, revenue, or assets of an entity, a real or personal right in property, or a right to remuneration, or any other private gain or benefit. And of course, next to that, the definition of employee is important, and that means any person employed in an organ of state, in the national, provincial, or local sphere of government, including public entities. Of course, that's important because obviously they have to come under this legislation in terms of what we set out to achieve, or any other institution identified in national legislation. Then going on to the, which I suppose is a critical aspect of the bill, and that's found on the next page, and that is disclosure of business interests or employees and family members of employees in entities conducting business with the state. That's the core of the piece of legislation. Here we see there is a dual responsibility. There's a responsibility on the entity itself, which has to provide an affidavit in the prescribed manner disclosing any business interests that an employer, obviously an employer of the state, or family member of an employer has in that entity. That's the entity which is about to do business with the state. So that's critical. So there's a focus on the entity itself that's going to do business to provide that affidavit. But there's also a responsibility on the employee to describe in the prescribed manner to the state any business interest that the employer or obviously family member as defined has in the entity conducting business with the state. So there's a dual responsibility both on the individual and on the entity, so that one has a kind of pincer movement to cover all bases in that context. Next key clause is, of course, clause 3, which is, of course, the restriction of business. What you're saying is that an employer may not have a business interest in any entity conducting business with the state if the employer himself or herself, together with one or more family members, partners, other employees, directly or indirectly controls more than 5% of the shares. Now, of course, one can play with that figure. 5% is 5% of an arbitrary figure. It's a figure which we think is an appropriate level. And, of course, this doesn't apply if one had to bring this legislation in to contracts that have already been concluded. You can't, in fact, unilaterally terminate a contract in that context, but it will apply afresh to any new contract going forward. There are, of course, exceptions, and there are provisions for exceptions, and those exceptions can be given by the Director General or the appropriate person at that level of government. And, of course, we set out the criteria because there have to be certain criteria governing the exceptions which can in fact be given to the essence of the bill. And then really the last one is clause 5, which is the clause which is what happens if you fail to comply. And of course, failure by an entity doing business with the state to disclose any interest that an employer has in that entity will enable the state, if after investigation found to be correct, to cancel the contract and claim damages if necessary. So that's the one remedy. Of course, if the alleged failure is by the employee, then of course it does expose that employee to disciplinary actions against that employer in the nature described in the Act. That, short and simple, Mr. Chairman, is the nature of the bill. I do stress that we believe it's important. It is, in essence, the bill that I have to say to you was enacted in the Western Province fairly recently, at the beginning of the year, and was hailed as a step forward by the press in terms of trying to contain, never get rid of it, but contain the nature of corruption that can exist in terms of employees. Thank you.
What province are you referring to, Western Cape?
Sorry, Western Cape. I have rugby on my mind, so
thank you. Thank you very much. I wanted to be sure that I understand.
Well, we are a province of rugby.
But thank you very much. I'm sure you can see that. Honourable members, we will do the way we are doing it. We will seek clarity, you know, kind of questions, just to be sure that we understood the presentation. Let's not fall into the trap of trying to get into the merits of the, you know, the discussion. This is the moment. Can you, if there's an area that you wanted him to elaborate and make you to understand what exactly was the presentation meant, this is the moment. Any clarity-seeking question? Honourable Kellyanne.
Thank you, Chair. The committee seems to be very restrictive this morning. I don't know if they reserved the weather.
Okay. In the morning.
I think so. Jefferson, I just wanted to say, because I really like the intention of the legislation, I just wanted to ask the Honourable Davidson, does he have in mind a special unit? I mean, we have, for instance, anti-corruption line that has been established, etc. So where would such a unit be placed, firstly? Secondly, just in terms of linking it to the PFMA, I still regard it as one of the most serious dereliction of duty of government, that we have not so far seen any real action taken in terms of the PFMA of officials that have been found guilty. I mean, we see these public service reports, and for anybody that is following the trends, it's very, very disconcerting. So how do we link that, and will we criminalize such activities, and does he perhaps foresee that we actually establish some other listing process of companies that will be blacklisted right through the country, that would never be able to conduct business with any level of state, national, provincial, local government? And how will we ultimately be able to enforce it? Because if we succeed in this, we can really stem a tide that is engulfing South Africa. I really just need the clarity of how does it practically envisage will this operate. Thank you.
Before that, Honourable Dindo, I'm sure if you can note them so that we make progress.
Thanks, Chair. I just want a small clarity. If Mr. Davidson is referring to employees of the Office of State and family members, you say family members also, of that employee. Those family members for us Africans who are almost all of us are families.
I'm sure she wanted to say extended family members. Are you considering an extended family member in that regard, Honorable Kubai?
Okay, I think I'm also following up on what Honorable Julian has already. And just asking Honorable Davidson, in terms of the current legislation, are you saying that there isn't anywhere where this matter is covered? Or is the issue, because I just wanted to check, I know you said we should not get into the deliberation, but just checking from him, if we're not running away from the issue of non-implementation of the current available legislation to create new legislation. I'm just trying to check that. So the current PFMA, and you have referred to the issues of non-disclosure, senior government officials within the deadline. I think that is a matter of just enforcement of the available legislation. Are we not sort of, I'm just trying to so that you clarify that one for me. And yeah, then the extent in terms of, have you checked in terms of constitutionality? What work have you done in terms of this legally? The legal implications, not being passing or developing a law that is likely to be challenged, just to check on that, and the extent of the people. Because another issue, what motivates the extension of this proposal of going to families? We just to check that from even an employee to extending it to the families.
I'm sure the last one will be Honorable Van Wyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start with the last question on the families. I want to start with, normally when you make provision for family members within legislation that it affects family members, one would talk about immediate family. It would be husband or spouse and children. It won't be extended to brothers and sisters, etc. I see in this the proposal is actually to go that far. Can you motivate for us why that? Then I'm also not quite clear what it is that we're trying to do with the legislation. Is it in order to restrict business, to regulate business with of state officials who've got interest in business, or is it to try and outlaw it completely? I think we need to get clarity on that issue. And then my last question would be, is how did you arrive at the 5% that a person can have to have more than 5% shares? Why not 10%? Why not 20%? And quite frankly, sometimes a 5% share in a certain company can be worth far more than a 50% share in another company, depending on the contract, etc. So I'm a bit perturbed about how we arrive at the 5% as well.
Thank you. I'm sure I will allow you, therefore, to try and clarify this thing.
Thank you, and thank you for the good questions. I mean, I will try and answer this. As far as Ms. Killian is concerned, Honorable Killian, the beauty of this piece of legislation is that it's, in a sense, self-enforcing. There doesn't have to be a unit, because otherwise you create a bureaucracy. There is a responsibility on both parties, the entity and the family. Person or the person doing business to actually declare their interest. And of course, it may well be that a person might get away with it, but then if found out, and then there are the prescribed disciplinary procedures or possibly damages as a result of the cancellation of the contract. So it's self-enforcing in that context, and no bureaucracy is required to be part of it. Whether in fact one chooses to draw up a list of people who have, or entities that have, or business entities I should say, that have contravened it, well, that may well be possible. But I go back to the point that it's really self-enforcing in terms of the fact that affidavits are required and disclosures are required. And that in itself I would deem to be sufficient. Going to Honourable Member Tinto, in respect of family members, we have set out exactly the members who we are deemed to be appropriate. Of course, it's very difficult. I mean, you can, you're quite right. In certain communities, there are extended families. I think one has to draw limits somewhere. And I don't want to get into detailing exactly who should be and who shouldn't be part of that extended family. We're talking about a conceptual bill, a bill in principle, and you might care to either limit it or extend it. And that applies in my answer to Mrs. Honourable Van Wyk as well. We have spoken about brothers and sisters simply because it's very easy, Honourable Van Wyk, to actually say, well, you know, I can put the business in my brother's name and I can get my brother to actually just pay me whatever financial gain comes through the system and get round the legislation, the intent of the legislation as such. And of course we want to prohibit that to a reasonable degree. Now, look, if somebody wants to actually be corrupt, then there are many, many, many ways to actually achieve that corruption. What you're trying to do is put in place a mechanism which, as far as possible, makes it a little bit more difficult, in fact, much more difficult, for family members who are employed in a business or own a business, a small percentage of a business, to actually do business with the state. Because there's a conflict of interest there. And so one is putting limitations on that. That's really what we try to do. Going back to Honourable Kabai, in respect of current legislation, there is no current legislation which is this specific that we are aware of. And as to the constitutionality of it, well, as I did indicate to you, the Western Cape has passed this piece of legislation. I'm advised, because I anticipated that question, whether they've done an investigation as to the constitutionality of it, and they have certified that it is constitutional, and there's certainly been no challenge or no indication of a challenge in that context, so I must assume that in that context it is constitutional. Going back to Honourable Van Wyk, I don't think I've completed your question. Whether it is to restrict or outlaw, I mean, in a sense, I suppose it is to make it very difficult. I'm getting round it that way. You're going to, and I suppose that means that you're going to restrict. As I've indicated, just going back to that definition of family, it depends where you draw the line. You can indeed do business with, make sure that your brother or your brother's brother or your uncle does business and you get a stream of income via that. You know, people will get round it. But at least you are coming forth, government is coming forth, the state is coming forth, with a statement of very clear intent. And that's really what it's all about. Government and we as a state are saying, this type of behaviour is unacceptable. That's what it's really all about. We're saying to public servants, this type of behaviour is unacceptable. And if you do carry on business with the state and you directly benefit from that, then there will be recrimination. That's all we're saying. And, you know, at some stage, we have to draw the line and say this type of behaviour is unacceptable, and we're putting in place a mechanism to ensure that we restrict it as far as possible. As I said to you, you know, people will find ways, corrupt people always find ways, unfortunately, to get around the system. All that you're doing is making it a little bit more difficult. Why 5%? Well, 5% was, I suppose, an arbitrary figure. It's a detail which you can, in fact, debate upon and really come to your own conclusion as to what level that figure should be. It's just an indication of what could be a meaningful stream of income. Now, you're quite right. 5% of a very small contract is minimal. 5% of a huge contract is a mass amount of money. I just cannot think of any other way of a formulation to actually relay the intent of the legislation in a form that is meaningful. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I've answered your question.
I think you have tried. I'm convinced you have covered nearly every corner. It will remain with them. I think the point that the honourable members have been, you know, trying to get into it is to say the fact that even when you were presenting the percentage that you were showing from PSCs and so on, it say there is a lack of compliance. They were trying to check whether this particular piece of, you know, proposal that you are bringing on, will it, you know, have an impact in compliance. But I think I should remark for the first time in the meeting that Honourable Pretorius decided not to talk. I'm not sure it's because that is your boss, Honourable. Yeah, I'm sure you may do just you know, closing wrap up. I'm aware that there are people that when they are here, Honourable Pretorius decided to reserve himself.
I'm sure, Mr. Chairman, once I leave the room, Honourable Pretorius will be more than adequately make up for his silence. Just one point that I think I didn't talk to, and that is, I think it was a question about whether we are not trying to close a gap which, in fact, is there covered by a different piece of legislation. In fact, no, we're not. The one matter I did talk to is the financial disclosure framework. But that's a separate piece of legislation. And I just utilised that in my motivation by way of an illustration of the extent of people ignoring the legislation that is there, an indication of how people can and will avoid legislation in order to indulge in corrupt practices. As I said, the beauty of this piece of legislation is that it really is self-enforcing in the sense that yes, people may get away with it, but if they are caught, then there are quite severe ramifications, both for the individual and for the entity. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I hope you enjoy contemplating a few decisions.
Thank you very much, Honourable Davidson, for coming and assist us to understand the objectives behind the proposal you are forwarding to us. I think we may then release you for other business of the day.
Thank you once again.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
I'm sure this brought us to
conclusion of the
presentation by Honourable Davis, and then we'll move forward to consider a review and adoption of the first recommendations report on the legislative proposal to repeal the South African Boxing Act number 11 of 2001, which has been submitted to us by Honourable Lee. Thank you, sir. So can we then look at that report if anything? There is a proposed adoption moved by Honourable Kubai. Any seconder to that?
Chair, I see in most respects we refer to, in the body of the report, we refer to legislation soon to be introduced. Did the department give us any idea what is the timeline?
I'm sure we circulated a program which has been detailed even days indeed. I'm sure that we
don't. I know that now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Calling for seconda as I was doing. Honourable Kellyanne, any objection for the adoption of the report? Nothing. The report will then be forwarded to the office of the Speaker for AGC. The next proposal is related to legislative proposal to correct the anomalies in the Executive Members Ethics Act number 82 of 1998. Anything on that report? I'm sure all of them are on Annex 2. They are coming one after another. Honourable Pretoria.
Gee, I have no problem with the report as it stands. Can I just make a comment to say that in point number 3, where we again stipulate the dates given by the department, we must just reserve the right to ourselves that we must act upon non-compliance. If after a month or two nothing has come, we're aware of that, then this committee must at least communicate with the relevant department again to ask them what's happening here. Otherwise, they can give us make promises to us and we fall for it, nothing happens.
Okay. I thought since we'll be reporting to the office of the Speaker, it becomes the responsibility of the Speaker, but it doesn't relinquish us as the vested party to keep on checking. If there's nothing on, you can then sensitize that. Honourable Van Dijk.
No, Chair, I agree with you. I think it also becomes the responsibility of the relevant committee, for instance, Committee of Justice, because they would also have received this programme. And I don't think we've got sanctioning power in terms of that. We can inquire, but other than that, we cannot do much around it.
Honourable Fouai, then you'll follow Honourable
Chair. Okay, thanks, Chair. I think for... Sorry. Procedurally, Chair, is that once a report goes to the House, it's a House decision which is binding to the executive. It gets published to the AGC. And I'm not so sure if we want to say we are going to put, we must put, because we can't put in our reports to say this is what we are going to do, but the report as it stands, it can go to AGC. If we want, maybe what we can do as part of mechanism for the committee, later go back and say maybe after a term we review where have we been, but it's not something that we can, as Annelise, as Honourable Van Dijk is saying, that you can't function as a committee, but we've got to find mechanism harmony because it doesn't, because it's in the, once it's a House matter, it says it to be a committee issue. I don't know if I'm making sense, because it's now in Parliament. Once we submit this report, it can be our own baby now.
Honourable Terrible.
Chairperson, I don't think my colleague asked for sanction, and I just wanted to make that clear. And also, surely we should, I understand that it will be a report of the House and then once it's published in the ATC, but and it shouldn't be, as you put it, our baby then anymore, but surely we should have the right to follow up on the matter. For instance, on point 3, it says March 2011, and it will be taken to Parliament for consideration in April 20, the same year. It's already the 23rd. I don't know whether anything has been received. So now we're on the 23rd of March. We the report has not been on the ATC yet. It must, I don't know when it will appear. So if it appears next week, it will be the end of March. And then already, you know, what was the function then of deliberating on this and putting a time frame in there in the first place, if it's simply something that can be ignored? I mean, then we should look at the time frame maybe again, because we are now on the 23rd of March, and maybe we should then say we will adopt the report, but, you know, ask questions about when it will then appear.
I think what I was trying to say here, it's all of what you are saying is very correct. We are an extension of, Parliament. We are an extension, the strength of the Speaker when he discharges his obligation. Hence, I'm saying, since we are a vested interest party, we will, from time to time, monitor our work and then sensitize the office to say there's something that is falling down. Now you are aware of it. And then that's the spirit that we are working in this parliament. Honorable Kuba.
Okay, can we read the sentence correctly? I think it's writing correctly. It says the report, the final approval to cabinet, not to parliament in March. And then it comes to parliament in April. So I don't think we are in a red flag where we should be panicking. Because introduction of it, because we can't know from where we're sitting whether what is happening in cabinet. But we can only look at what comes in legislative point of view in April at committee level. And I think that is quite easy. Because through party whips who sit in NA programming can be able to see what legislation has been introduced in committees. So it should be easy for us to track. So I would appeal that let's move and not deliberate further on the matter.
Chair, just to comment, I don't think we're differing at all. We're talking the same language, and I agree with Honourable Kabay that once it's out of our domain, it becomes the property of the House, and we can't do anything about it. All I'm asking is that we must flag it to ourselves to inquire, let's use the word inquire, nothing more than that. I'm not asking for anything formal. We must just be aware that we are putting time frames in, and we must have the right, at least, to ask a question afterwards.
Any move for adoption of the report as it is? Honourable Van Wyk, Honourable Munivadzi, second. Any objection? Thank you. The report will then be signed and sent to the Office of the Speaker for ATC. The last consideration, review and adoption is on the legislative proposal to regulate private funding of political parties.
Statement on this one, with your indulgence. I'm appealing to the chair to write to the speaker of the conduct of member Hrenge. I'm lodging it as a formal complaint from my side. He walked out of the committee, and the article, if what he has said in the Million Garden is a true reflection of what he has said, I think he needs to be reprimanded because he's really a questioning our ability as members of this committee without substantive evidence, and as well what he is doing for me is subject to, you know, the issue of putting or bringing this parliament into disrepute. You can't go to public and give a false account on a happening of a committee that he walked out on. I mean, for that as well, he came here to present, and he suddenly, because things didn't go his way, he walked out. And I thought that we could tolerate that at some point. But the follow-up of an article, I think it's uncalled for, and he should be reprimanded. And I'm appealing to Chair to proceed and write to the Speaker and request that. While I move for the adoption of the report.
I'm sure that will be considered, Honourable Kubai. I'm sure you would recall the behavior of Honorable Grayling leaving the meeting. It was uncalled for, but you know, sometimes you become generous and accept that people can be, you know, controlled by emotions. But when members, you know, become observant of that, you are forced to do what the law and the rules of Parliament wanted you to do. Is there any seconder to the move for adoption of the report? I'm sure there is an addition that was earlier proposed by Honorable Pretorius, whom I will give him an opportunity to.
Chair, we're talking about the report and not the comments of Honorable Kabay. Okay. Yes, I just thought maybe to, in a sense, make it more clear that we've taken a resolution based on specific legal advice that we got. If we were to just insert the words in the middle part of the resolution, where it says the committee wishes to make the following observations, I would propose that we say the committee, comma, having taken parliamentary legal advice, wishes to make. Just to make it doubly sure that this is not what we found somewhere in the air. We basically based it on parliamentary legal advice, because this is quite a controversial decision that we've taken here.
I think why I was, you know, reminding him that he had something that he proposed as an amendment, it is in relation to what Honorable Kubai have said, to say the matter seems to be very, you know, easily challengeable. and we need to tighten even our report to say we were also advised by the legal parliamentary legal advice. I'm sure we'll add that, and we'll also include it in the final report, paragraph when we close the matter in conclusion. Okay. Honorable Pretoria.
Chair, can I comment on the comments by Honorable Kabay about Mr. Freling's actions last week? I haven't seen the report or the newspaper report to base on, to make a decision on what we should do, but my own understanding or feeling is that his actions, although it's uncomfortable and unsatisfactory, but I don't think it justifies a formal complaint. You know, he was just very unhappy about the fact that his proposal didn't go any further. But I can't comment on what's in any newspaper report. I haven't seen that.
Honorable Van Beek, then.
Chairperson, I think it goes further than only the newspaper report. If you look at the letter from IDASA, it's also clearly based on that. And if you look at our report is not based simply on the findings of the legal advice that we got. There were other issues that we've taken in consideration as well. But I would suggest, Chairperson, that the committee secretary distributes the newspaper article to members of this committee who hasn't seen it. I personally did see it. And that we then defer the Honourable Kubai's decision until after everybody has seen it, because I don't think what the Honourable Kubai is not referring to his behaviour in the committee. That to some extent, but more so what happened after the committee. The fact that a false report was given to the media, and I think from what I see here to IDASA as well.
Can we then request that the proposal by Honourable Kubai be considered in the next meeting after everybody will be given an opportunity to see every development after the committee of this government. Can we then consider the adoption of the report if in section of the amendment to reflect the after being properly given legal, parliamentary legal advice that we adopted. Honourable Kubai moved. Any second for the move? Honourable Dindo. Any objection for the adoption of the report? Honourable Pretoria.
I just get clarity. Honourable Member from Mike now said that the decision was not based entirely on the legal advice, and to my recollection it was really the legal advice that made us take the decision. If it's not so, maybe we should just in my amendment insert the word also, having also taken parliamentary legal advice. It will cover her point then, because I'm not quite sure which part she referred.
Well, she was referring to my comment
and not
your
on this
amendments
one.
Are
okay, then I'm quite happy we carry on.
She was just reflecting that my request to write to the Speaker for the decision is not only on certain working out, but as well what has been happening with the newspaper that we've done.
Objection for the adoption of the report as it is with the amendment? Nothing. So the report will be so adopted. We are on the last item, the considerations of the minutes as they are. Can we quickly go page 1? Is there anything on Annex 5? Anything on page 1 is just next. Page 2, that's where the business is.
Chairperson, I just wanted to say, unfortunately, I could not make the meeting. I just wanted to make sure that whatever is contained in the minutes, we must make sure that it is actually factually very correct, so that if there is any further sort of, can I say, scrutiny of the committee's work, that it actually captures everything that was considered and presentations made adequately.
You are making me suspicious.
Yeah.
Is there anything on page 2? Nothing. Page 3?
based on the point of which Mrs. Mentioned, I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't in 2.2 just also insert somewhere the fact that we're referring to the legal opinion.
Yeah, I think it's
important. Point number 2.2, I think we must change it to reflect the amendment that we affected to the report, to bring in the bit of the legal opinion.
I have a lot of experience in legal cases at present.
Not because you are so
she's getting a degree.
Well, you must choose the members. Look at the history of most winning cases.
Thank you. So, I meant the issue of the legal advice and in that 2.2. Page 3.
I just want it reflected that you had raised a concern with honourable feeling working out, and therefore the dismantlement.
Oh, of course. I think that was. That behaviour was on the 16th, the last meeting, not the 9th. We should not. Okay. Thank you very much, Secretary. For I'm sure it's very important. anything on the minutes? Any mover for adoption of the minutes as a true reflection? Honourable Mulibati. Any seconder for the adoption? Honourable Kubai. Any objection for the? This minute will then be so adopted as a true reflection of what happened on the 9th of March 2011. Without any additional thank you, the meeting is adjourned because of this thing behind us.
Okay.